Welcome back, friend. Can you even believe this is episode 50 of the Get Legit Law and Shit podcast? Oh my goodness, I can't either. I'm so excited that you're here. I'm so excited to be here with you. And I can't wait to share my answers to some of the amazing questions you asked me, because the reason I do this podcast is to share with you. So let's just get into it.
Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit, and we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started.
All right, so jumping right into questions from Instagram first, and thank you for everyone who answered this. I am going to be answering as many as I can with username, and then those that were a lot of the same question, I'm just going to be answering as a group, and I will just say, hey, a lot of you asked me this. And then there's just a few things I want to share for fun. So my lovely friend, Julie at Sparkle Hustle Grow. And if you haven't checked out Sparkle Hustle Grow, you absolutely should. It is a subscription box for female entrepreneurs with learning and community and goodies. Hashtag not sponsored, but it's so much fun. Anyway, so this is the first question that I am going to answer today. And it is, have you checked out Hoaxed yet? I have not checked out Hoaxed yet. But from everything I've seen online about it, it is a fantastic film diving into the topics of media and how media changes the perception of groups of people and individuals as well. And you know I talk a lot about that on here. So it is something I will be checking out and diving into. You know I couldn't stay away from like Tiger King and stuff. Did you guys know that Carol Baskin was going to be on Dancing with the Stars? I mean, it's been a while since I've watched Dancing with the Stars, but I might have to do it because I'm very curious. And all the memes online saying if Carol Baskin doesn't dance to Eye of the Tiger, then it's a shame and they'll boycott the show. I agree. So I'm going to have to check it out because I just want to see it. Though I'm kind of mad that they just fired like Tom Bergeron like out of nowhere and we're like, oh, by the way, you've been with this show since the beginning. Goodbye. That's beside the point. Anyway, I have not checked out Hoaxed yet, but I will, and I will share my thoughts here and on social media, because where else does one share thoughts these days if not also on social media? Like, if you have a thought and you don't share it on social, did you have a thought? The next question comes from Haley Darrell, who asked, would you recommend trying to get into law school at age 34? Now, there's two parts to this answer. The first part is, why go to law school? And the second part is, does age matter? Does when you go to law school matter? And the two parts of this analysis are connected. Law school. Law school is a lot of things. And one of them is very expensive most of the time. If you know exactly what you want to do, and law school is the only way to accomplish it, then you should go to law school. But you need to really evaluate if law school is actually the only way to accomplish what you want to accomplish. There are so many ways to get things done in the world today that law school, unless you really are like, no, I am dying to be an intellectual property attorney and I want to like argue trademarks to the U.S. Patent Office, or I want to be a public defender or a district attorney, or I want to be, you know, a mediator or do divorce and family law. If there is a very specific and attainable goal, then you need to go to the second part of the analysis, which is cost benefit. So the first part of the analysis is, what is the goal here? Does law school accomplish the goal? And is it the only way to accomplish the goal? You can be an advocate. You can be an ally. You can make powerful change without being an attorney. there are some things you have to be an attorney to do. If you're just curious about law in general, I am sure you can find classes about foundations of law, U.S. history, histories of laws that will explore those themes without being law school. Law school is a lot of training on how to think, and they talk about this in Legally Blonde, but it's legit true. It's thinking like a lawyer and how to break down thoughts like a lawyer and how to break down arguments like a lawyer. But law school is not the only way to train yourself in thinking in a different way. And if you don't need to have a bar license to do what you want to do, the cost-benefit analysis comes next. And that is, how much is this going to cost me? And how much is it going to bring in to me if I spend the money? I wish I had done this before I went to law school. I wish somebody had talked to me about it. I wish there had been a consideration of what is the 3-year cost of going to law school. I came out of law school with over $100,000 in debt just from law school. What I didn't consider was how long it would take me to pay that debt back, how much I would be paying to pay that debt back. Because remember, student loan interest rates are not low, depending on the type of loan that you have. And what is the goal? What is the job after this? Oh, you want to spend over $100,000 to go to law school, Emily, to be a public servant. Maybe the cost-benefit analysis should have come into play a little bit earlier. But my husband and I both always were taught, and I think absorbed from the societal norm, like go to school, whatever you spend to go to school is fine. Just go to school. It's going to pay back, especially professional school. He's trained as an advanced dentist. He's a maxillofacial prosthodontist. It's a lot of school, people. It's a lot of consonants. It took me forever to learn how to spell maxillofacial. They're words with X's. But it's a lot of school. And the cost benefit on that has to be evaluated. And both of us just were like, this is what I want to do, go to school. Neither of us were like, and how much will the job pay? And what will that job be like? And will I like it? Will I still like it when I'm a parent? Do I want to have free time to myself? So I felt like my law school debt, especially as I got older, was a cage, truly, that was holding me into a choice that I made when I was young. I started law school in my early 20s. I finished law school at 27, I think. I'd have to go back and do the math. But I was in my early 20s when I started law school, newly married. And my husband was a doctor. So at the time, we were just like, whatever, it'll be fine. Money's money. We'll make money. We'll pay back loans. But it really started to feel like a cage when I wanted to make some other choices for myself and for my life. Because one of the things when my husband and I decided together that I was going to leave the district attorney's office, obviously it was my decision as well, but there's a lot that goes into that, you know, healthcare and retirements and money spent on law school and how much are we going to make starting my own business. And I was looking at going from one of us being employed, me, in a very stable government position, and one of us being self-employed to both of us being self-employed. So there were a lot of discussions, and the student loans were the biggest factor. It's like, God, if I didn't have these loans. And there were so many times that I said to myself, if I didn't have these loans, what would I choose differently? So my student loans became a cage. If law school is not going to be terribly expensive, and if it is the way to reach the goal, go for it. Law school is fascinating. And I imagine if you go to law school with a little more life perspective than a 20-year-old, that there's a lot more to be taken away from that experience than just test taking. But know what you want to do with it first. And that's with any advanced degree. You need to have a very clear picture of how you're going to use it and what the return on investment is, because your education is an investment. And it's not just, well, everybody goes to college. It needs to be a more thoughtful decision than that. And this is the conversation I'm going to have with both of my kids when it's time to decide if undergrad, traditional undergraduate education is right for them, or if a more specialized educational path is right for them, or if a trade is right for them, or if being an artisan is right for them, or if being a coffee roaster is right for them. Like, there's a lot of discussions that are going to happen before we just spend. I mean, shit tons of money to go get an education. So this is basically what I would tell and what I do tell anyone who asks me, would you go to law school? The reason the age comes into this is if you're going to want to work long enough to pay back that investment too, because law school's 3 or 4 years. I mean, unless you're Kim Kardashian and you decide you're doing an apprenticeship track, and that's a whole different situation. But also, I'm not having this investment conversation with her because Kim's like, whatever, I basically poop money. So it becomes, will you work long enough in your career to pay back that money? Will it set back your retirement planning, spending the money? And do you want to take on that additional overhead in your life as you are looking at what are the next phases? Do you want to buy a house? Do you want to buy a bigger house? Do you want to buy a vacation house? Do you want to work less? Do you want to work more? All of those are factors that go into if law is the right choice. And I will tell you, since I have made the shift from a more traditional type of legal practice into more legal consulting, choose your own adventure, entrepreneurship, most of the lawyers I interact with are jealous. Most of them are like, oh my God, how did you do it? Of course, the online lawyers are like, we have a secret. We know how to do this in a way that we love. But most lawyers still in traditional jobs are envious of the choice and the freedom that I have created for myself. And that is not uncommon in law. One of the things that really struck me when my friends and I were getting out of law school and they were going into traditional law firm jobs, which are like impossible to find nowadays, mostly contractor work when you get out of law school. And I was going into the district attorney's office, is that in the law firms, most of them had marriage counselors and therapists as a part of the services that they offered to their young attorneys, because divorces were causing so much strain on the members of the practice, because that was the norm. I didn't want to enter that either. So I made a lot of choices in going to the district attorney's office. I knew that's the kind of law I wanted to practice, and I still think it's one of the greatest jobs in the world. However, doing the consulting work I do now is so fulfilling, and I feel so blessed to get to help so many business owners who want to have impact and that want to change aspects of the world, that want to empower people, that want to do more. And I feel like my impact is even bigger because not only do I have my impact here and in my own little corner of the internet, but also all the business owners I help succeed have their own impact. And it feels like a ripple effect of doing good for the world. Because entrepreneurs, honestly, are going to save the world. The innovators, the ones who are like, I want to make money, but I want to give back. I want to make change. I want to support the causes I believe in. I want to be carbon neutral in my business. I want to do good in this world. And because entrepreneurs tend to run a little smaller, they can make those wild, crazy shifts really fast. And that's so fun. That was a very, very long answer to a great question. Thank you for asking my opinions on law school, because your girl's got opinions all day long about lots of things. So SL Hearn asked, how is your back doing? I found you on YouTube searching spinal fusion success. Little known fact, I have a YouTube channel and I share all kinds of, I don't know, bits and bobs on my YouTube channel, mostly tech, but also the story about my spinal fusion and my discectomy before my spinal fusion, what back surgery was like for me and what that healing process was like. And those are some of my most viewed videos, is my back surgery. I mean, the other ones are about iPhones and purses. I told you it's a hodgepodge of stuff over on the YouTubes at The Emily D. Baker, just like the rest of the internet, if you're curious about what my YouTube channel looks like. It is not well loved, which, I mean, I love it, but it does not get the focus and attention that it deserves, because podcasting is honestly my favorite. But my back has been doing very, very well. I had 2 spinal surgeries within 1 year in 2016. I left the DA's office in 2017. And I have had some off and on issues with my back since, but not like I did. I had tremendous nerve pain down my legs. I had all the weird stuff, wet sensations on my legs, numbness in my feet. I had some bladder issues that were starting because of the nerve impingement in my back, which after you've had children, bladder issues are terrifying anyway. But then when it's like back related to, oh, it was so much. And I had a surgeon that I very much trusted who gave me a very realistic breakdown of what to expect from recovery. And I think that made so much difference for me, is I knew going into my spinal fusion, it was going to be at least a year of healing, and then it was going to be ongoing. What I found for me is that as I can move more, I can move more. And as I move more, my core is getting stronger. And that's really what I focus on, is keeping my core strong so I cannot load things into my back. And I realized that after having two children and not really rehabbing my core, it's probably part of why I damaged my lower back so much, is I didn't have any support for my back because I still had really numb muscles from my C-sections. I still had a lot of other stuff going on in my abdomen and scarring. And I didn't even know that that was something I should be doing. Now, my lovely friend Brianna Battles, who is the head of the pregnancy and postpartum athleticism movement, she coaches individuals about pregnancy and postpartum athleticism, and says words like pelvic floor therapy, and talks about rehabbing your body after birth and before birth and staying athletic during that time. I knew none of that. I didn't look into any of it. I figured if I needed to know anything, my doctor would tell me. And I don't think traditional doctors, especially OBGYNs, are thinking about core strength and health. They're thinking about like hoo-ha issues and healthy babies, which is all well and good, but then you're picking up really heavy shit. Like, kids in car seats are so heavy. And I know that that's a lot of what went into breaking down my back and my discs. And when my back went out, it wasn't anything dramatic. It wasn't a fall. I was leaning forward to pick something up. No, I wasn't. The first time I was leaning over to close the toilet seat. No, lift up the toilet seat. I was leaning over to lift up the toilet seat in the morning, and I had horrible shoots, waves of pain in my back. I couldn't even get to the doctor for 3 days because I couldn't get in a car. It was awful. And that's when the surgery process started. But now that I've learned so much more about my body, I've been able to set myself up for success with my back. Yes, I still get muscle spasms. Yes, there's times I'm still cautious. Like, if I slip on something, my back muscles will spasm trying to stabilize me. But the nerve pain, from the moment I woke up from surgery, I could feel that it was gone, and it has never come back. And it was such a relief. I couldn't drive. Gosh, the back stuff, man. Back pain is unlike anything else. When you can't sit down, you can't get comfortable. Even laying down is not super comfortable. It was a journey, but standing here in 2020, and I'm standing to record now, which I love, standing here in 2020, I have no regrets. I am glad I had a doctor that I trusted, and I am glad I also looked into other areas of wellness, and I found other practitioners to support my wellness and to deal with my overall core functioning and health, to deal with the scar tissue I had from previous surgeries. I've now had surgery through my abdomen way more than you guys needed to know. Five times. And that does a lot of damage to the muscles there. And I've started learning more. So if you are someone who is thinking about back surgery, needing to have back surgery, having chronic back issues, you've got to look at the other side of the muscles too and start looking at a more whole body approach to that wellness, because it's not just your back, it's your back and your hip flexors and your butt and all of the other stuff too. Now, I'm not a wellness professional. That has been my experience. But once I started evaluating everything, it got so much better. So thank you for asking. The back is great. I went for a hike with my family this morning. It's something I never thought I would be able to do again. So being active with my kids makes me feel like I'm living a life worth living, and has given me a lot of joy. I mean, I might not go horseback riding ever again, but I can choose where I'm comfortable. And it's a regular regular upkeep with the back, but it's doing really well. Maria McMillan 526 on Instagram asked, as a new business owner, what are the two things we can do? And she put in parentheses, the rich people shit, which I love. Maria, you were probably part of one of my recent trainings, possibly with the Virtual Savvy, a group of my friend, Abby Ashley, who teaches virtual assistants how to be, you know, kick-ass business owners. And when I talk about business formations, which I love strategizing a good business formation, an LLC or a C-Corp or professional corporation, love it. I also talk about the next level rich people money shit, because here's what I find for most of my business owners. Most of us, myself included, are first generation entrepreneurs and first generation business owners. We don't come from families where business ownership was the thing. So who is going to teach you the like generational knowledge of how all this business money stuff works? And yes, a good CPA will teach you some, and yes, a good tax strategist will teach you some, but it is an overall conversation that just isn't happening enough. And I think it's because the rich people guard these secrets. And I think it's because some of them forget that these are actually not commonly known things. So when business owners start, I always ask them to take out a piece of paper and do a budget. I'm sorry. You're sitting there going, Emily, I don't want to do a budget. Don't tell me to do that. I don't want to do it. Avoiding money in your business is a huge issue. So let's just get real comfortable with the money stuff, because if you're not comfortable with money, it's not going to be comfortable with you. It's like when you go to a bar and somebody comes up and is like, hey, how you doing? And you're like, ugh, I don't have time for you right now. They're not going to hang out. They're just not. So don't ugh at your money. You want it to come hang out. You want to be like, hey, boo, it's so good to see you. Good tonight. Do you have any friends? Why don't you bring them over? Let's all have a chat. Let's have some drinks. Let's hang out. You want your money to feel at home with you. So make a budget to figure out where your money's going. Because if it's going out at night and not coming back, you need to know. Track your money the way you want to track your kids on social media. Take a look at it first. And here's the thing. You've got to do two of these. And it's not just a budget. It is looking at your overhead in your family and in your business. So your family overhead is going to be things like cars, car insurance, cell phone bills, internet bills, cable, if anyone still does that, Hulu, Netflix, your mortgage or your rent, your homeowner's insurance or your renter's insurance, health insurance, all of those things. Look at all of them. Just write down how much you're spending on them, and then you kind of get your overhead. Like, how much are your kids' hockey lessons or archery or horseback riding? All of the things you have to spend money on in a month. How much are all those things? Get an idea of your overhead and then get an idea of how much money you're bringing in. You know, if it's from W-2, if it's from your business, if it's from your spouse, if it's from any other means, investments, write it all down and do the same thing in your business. Even if money's not coming in consistently yet, what are you spending money on that you have to spend money on every single month? Write it all down. How much is your internet hosting? For internet hosting. That's not what I meant. How much is your web hosting for your website? Do you pay it annually? Fine. Write down how much it is. Put annual next to it. Start breaking down what your business expenses are and looking at them, because the first thing to do is look at where we're spending money. Then we look at where we're making money, and then we tell our money where to go. So looking at that overhead will give you the picture that you need to do the next thing. And the next thing is to start shifting and strategizing your budget, understanding that there are two types of money in this world, pre-tax money and after-tax money. Pre-tax money means nothing's been pulled out of that shit yet. It's just your money. You get a dollar, it's a dollar. After-tax money is more like the money you get paid from a traditional job, where you get your paycheck and you see a number at the top of like, oh, this is how much money I made this month. And then you go down and you keep going down. And then you're like, oh, that's how much is in my bank account. Because they take out tax withholdings. They take out different types of payroll taxes like unemployment insurance and Social Security, possibly depending on your job and other things. So all of those things come out. So you get money all kinds of stuff gets deducted from it, and then you get what's left. So I am not good at math, but I like money. So I'm going to use numbers that are easy. If 30% comes out for taxes and other shit, you're not getting a dollar when you get a dollar. You're getting 70 cents. That's your after-tax money, 70 cents. You're going to call it dollar, but it's not a dollar. So when you go to pay for something with that, you have to pay more than a dollar because you really only have 70 cents. So all of that after-tax money means money's already come out and gone somewhere else. If you are paying business expenses with pre-tax dollars, you're paying with all of the dollar, 100% of the dollar, because taxes haven't come out of that shit yet. And guess what? They don't have to. Taxes don't come out of that money because it got paid to your business and then it paid for valid business expenses, okay? What your business gets taxed on is what's left at the end. What you personally get taxed on when you have a job is what's at the beginning. We want our money taxed at the end after we spend it on all the shit we need to spend it on, not at the beginning. So understanding how to use pre-tax and post-tax dollars to start maximizing your wealth is hugely important. And it's one of the things new business owners don't even think about. The first thing I tell them to look at, go to your little overhead list of your family budget, what your family's spending money on. I'm making hand gestures that you can't see. Lots of them. So if you hear me hitting my microphone, it's because I'm gesturing wildly because I love talking about this stuff. Look at your family overhead. What's that list of all the stuff you have to pay for every month? And then you start to shift some of those into your business. Do you use your cell phone for your business? Is it like your only form of communication for your business? Great, your business can pay for that. What about internet? How much internet do you use in your business? Oh, I bet it's a ton. Guess what? Your business can pay for that. And that's where we start to move family and household expenses into your business budget. So now the money that you bring into your family goes further, or you can strategize your tax bracket. And the way you would do that, A, with your tax strategist or your CPA, if they're awesome, you would look at what other money comes into the house, what tax bracket you're in, what your future plans are, and then decide how much money your business is going to bring into your family. Or if your business is going to take a corporate retreat once a year on a Disney cruise, and then your business is going to pay for that travel. Or if you're taking a business trip and then you're bringing your family along with you and you're working each day, but you also have family time, that becomes a business expense. So now travel becomes something you can do with business dollars as well. And there are a lot of tips and tricks like that, which is why when you start your business, working with someone is so helpful so you're not wasting those business expenses. And here for a new business owner is the next thing. When you invest in your business, track it. Put that money into your business account from your personal account. Don't just go pay your business credit card bill. Don't just go pay your business debts. Take the money from your personal account, put it into your business bank account, and spend it from there. Tag it as an owner investment, because as your business starts making cash, your business can pay back that loan to you with interest. And that's not taxed because it's paying back a loan. So it's a valid expense from your business. It's moving money into your personal plus interest. So you're paying yourself back plus interest. And that's not taxed to you as income either because it's a loan that's being repaid. And that's how you start to move money with intention. But the first step of that is to track it. I love using something like Mint for the personal tracking. I use a service called Bench for my business bookkeeping, separate from my business tax strategist and CPA. If you're not ready for a bookkeeper yet, that's fine. There are lots of resources out there, Xero and Wave and QuickBooks, that you can use to bookkeep in your own business. Just make sure you understand how to do it right. Bookkeeping's complicated, and when it's done wrong, it makes it much harder to do your taxes to take advantage of all of the benefits. Here's the truth. Get ready. Truth. In the U.S., businesses are set up to win in this tax system, not individuals. Businesses are set up to win. So when you see people complaining like, this business doesn't pay that much tax and this business doesn't pay that much tax, no, they don't. That's how the rules are set up. It doesn't mean they're doing anything wrong. They're playing by the rules that are set. If you don't like the rules, vote for different people. But those are the rules. Here's the thing. If you understand the rules, you can use the rules too. Amazon started in a garage just like my business. So did Apple. Okay? You can use the same rules to play that game to make some next level money so that you can make change. Because in the US, money also speaks when it comes to change making. Change making needs money. So if there's something you want to do or you want to change or you want to speak on, do it. But also put the money behind you so you can do it. I hope that makes sense. And I hope that answers the question. I feel very strongly about you getting out there in your business and making the money you want to make to do the good you want to do in the world. Because it's what I love to do for business owners. And it doesn't have to be scary. And I know money stuff can feel really scary. A lot of us weren't taught about it. A lot of us weren't told, the system's set up to win if you own a business. So what's that look like? But you also have to remember when you have a business, you also have to save for retirement. You have to plan a few years out to buy a house. You have to look at your goals going forward, not just I hope to make $5,000 this month. Look at where you want to be in a few years because you need to start laying the foundation now to use that money well. Because if you blow up in your business and haven't planned well, when you owe hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes, you're going to want to vomit. So lay the foundation now to win with your money. The next group of questions I'm grouping together, and it's all of the Hollis feedback. You guys are my people because you feel the same way about Rachel Hollis I do. And if you listened to the Rage Against Rachel Hollis episode and the Facebook live Q&A after that, you know that there's a lot of stuff that's happened since then. Dave Hollis is now writing a book about this unexpected divorce. Rachel Hollis was staying at their house, their marital home on Instagram and posting videos. They launched a health app. They're health influencers now. They're having a health conference, but then they changed the name of the health conference because it was super misleading. And everybody's like, you're not a professional. Stop giving advice that's damaging and body shaming and shitty. And you guys feel the same way. The comments that I saw were things like, all of their marketing makes me want to barf. I agree. The fact that both of them have books coming out about the divorce makes all of you think that it's fakey fake or bullshit. A lot of you said, I think they'll just do anything for money at this point. And I agree with you. The other question I got a number of was about Real Housewives. And I know that you're my people when you're asking about Real Housewives. Beverly Hills went off the rails this year in the Real Housewives world. I'm not going to talk about this forever. But there are some truth games being played in Beverly Hills. A number of you asked if I was team Lisa fucking Rinna or team Denise happy ending Richards. And here's the thing. I'm totally team Rinna. And here's why. I think Denise didn't like the way she was portrayed in editing in the show after her first season on the show. I think her husband's business probably got a lot of slack because she was on a, worldwide syndicated television show talking about his schlong and him getting a happy ending at a massage parlor, which in California is illegal, but whatever, and all this other stuff. I think his business probably had some impact, or there was some business impact with that. I think there were some conversations had with her and her kids of mom, seriously, the kids at school watch this and don't need to know about my stepdad's dick. I mean, I feel like that conversation probably happened. So when she came back on this season, it was very clear that she was trying to damage control her image, which is my least favorite thing, curated authenticity. She's like, no, it's totally real. It's not real, Denise. It feels like you watched yourself back on the show last year, didn't like what you saw. There were a bunch of conversations and you came onto the show this year to prove that you're not that. And you got super uptight about it. And Lisa called you out and was like, you knew what you signed up for. You signed up to be on a reality TV show where we share the ins and outs of our lives, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you're not here to play, get the fuck out. Like, you knew what this was. And we're going to call you on it. Though I do think Brandi Glanville's a media whore, she's never said she wasn't. Brandi Glanville has always said, I want attention. I want the spotlight. I'm super damaged after my divorce, and I am trying to stay relevant any way possible. We always knew that. But man, those text messages and Denise saying the text messages were faked and sending everybody cease and desist to not talk about it on television reminds me of something out of Dance Moms where it's like, no, you can't talk about this on the show. And we learned about the Bravo, Bravo, Bravo thing where that's what the cast members say when they want to tag something they're really uncomfortable having on air. And I think when that's something about your kids or that's something that you've never brought up, that's fair. But this was out there. So it's going to be really interesting. And once again, I say this in business all the time. I say this to my students and my clients. You can't put the shit back in the horse. Once that's out there, you've got to deal with it. Whether it's true or whether it's false, you have to deal with it. And I think the way Denise dealt with the accusations from Brandi, and if you don't watch Housewives and you're like, Emily, what in the what? Brandi Glanville's making all kinds of allegations that Denise Richards had sex with her and stepped out on her marriage and then made her feel like crap about it and like gaslit her about it and all this other stuff. I don't even care if it's true. Don't care. Don't care at all. None of my business. Don't really give a shit. The way Denise handled it is like she's trying to hide something. And that's where all the issues came up on the season. So yeah, I'm team Lisa Rinna because Lisa called her on it and was like, the way you're handling this is weird. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. It's out there. We have to talk about it. And she was like getting lawyers and shutting it down. And that's not always the right thing to do when something's already out there. You're on a reality show. The skeletons are going to come out. Hello. So I'm team Rinna because I think that she was keeping it 100. She's not always PC about it. She's not always polite about it. But I feel like Lisa's keeping it 100 and Denise is not. So curated authenticity on Denise. And I don't like that shit at all. One last question came from my husband. And I told him he was being way too sassy and that he was going to cause division in my audience with this. But also, I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to answer it and I'm going to ask you guys to answer it. So when you're listening to this, go ahead, take a screenshot, share it on social, tag me at the Emily D. Baker and tell me how you vote. Because my husband wanted to know, Marvel or DC, who reigns supreme? And I'm like, obviously Marvel. Don't divide my audience. Yes, we like Wonder Woman, but Black Widow's kind of a self-made badass, not an alien from another planet who has weird super strength. And I love her. And the Red Witch is also pretty badass. So I feel like Marvel has a fair bit, and Captain Marvel, we've got a, you know, Captain Marvel too. I feel like Marvel has a fair bit of badass females, and DC has a lot of whiny, toxic men. And Marvel has Spider-Man. And Stan Lee is a hero among men. May he rest in peace. So I'm all Team Marvel. Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy? Come on now. I'm Team Marvel. Also, DC can't get its shit together and put out a decent movie. The DC characters are scattered across all different kinds of inconsistent storylines and canon. I can't with DC. I'm a Marvel girl all the way around. And I would love to know if you are Marvel or DC or if you don't give a shit. Those are your three options. So share it with me on social because I would love to see. Thank you for hanging out with me for episode 50. I am so excited to be sharing episode 100, episode 150, episode 400. I can't wait to continue to be here with you and continue these conversations. Sometimes they're heavy, sometimes they're light, but they're always great. I appreciate you. Thank you for being with me, friend. And I will talk to you next week. Thanks for sticking around for today's episode. For episodes like this and conversations like this, come join us in the Facebook community. The Get Legit community is where we discuss the episodes, where I answer your questions, and we have an opportunity to take a deeper dive in a respectful, conversational environment
The Get Legit community is on Facebook. There's a link down below, or you can go to getlegitlive.com. I'll see you on the inside.